Today's episode of My Life as a Foodie is brought to you by GoDaddy. I've used GoDaddy for all of my domain names for over 15 years. SSL certificates, some hosting, email for clients and myself. They're trusted, tried, and true. You can get your own domain, build a website, fully hosted with email and more with GoDaddy. As a special offer, listeners of the show can save 30% off their order by visiting trygodaddy.com/foodie. With award-winning 24/7 support, more than 14 million customers worldwide, and over 62 million registered domain names, GoDaddy has been helping their customers kick ass by giving them the tools, insights, and the people to transform their ideas and personal initiative into success. Whether you have a new idea or are an established business, the key to success online starts with a great domain name. And for me, that starts with GoDaddy. In fact, I just got a new one the other day. I was wrong about GuyFieri.com. So find out why so many business owners choose GoDaddy for their domain names and save 30% off your order by visiting trygodaddy.com/foodie. That's trygodaddy.com/foodie. Hey, so I came across this piece of listener mail that I haven't read on the show. It was pretty funny. Alan, a member of our audience, wrote in saying that now that I have kids, he thought I'd relate to this story of his son refusing not to be truthful to his teacher. I guess his son's teacher was asking the class what their favorite animal was, and she gets to Alan's son, and he says fried chicken. And she told him that he wasn't funny, but the whole classroom was cracking up. And he told her, he says, no, I like fried chicken. And, you know, this kid's like saying, well, my parents told me I always be the truthful and always tell the truth, and that fried chicken was his favorite animal. So Alan tells his son that, look, you know, your teacher was probably, you know, a member of PETA and that they love animals very much. Yeah. Anyway, his teacher sent him to the principal's office. She thought he was being a cut-up. So he tells the principal what happened, and the principal starts laughing. Then the principal tells him, look, just don't do that again. So the next day in class, the teacher comes to him and asks him what his favorite live animal was. So he tells her it's chicken. So she asked him why, and he told her it was because you can make them into fried chicken. She sends him back to the principal's office, and the principal's laughing, and I told him, don't do that again, you know, just try to, you know, be cool with your teacher. And he says, look, I'm just being honest. So next day, teacher's asking the whole class, who their most famous person, the most famous person that they admire the most. So she's asking the whole class. She gets to him. The kid tells her Colonel Sanders. Hey, what's happening? Welcome back. Got a pretty good show for you today, talking about a movie that I wanted to discuss about chef life. And it's pretty funny. I cursed a lot last episode. A little shocked in myself. Didn't realize how bad my language is getting, so I'm going to try to curb that a little bit. I really didn't even notice until, you know, I listened to the show once it's done, I play it for Michelle, and she and I listen to it together before I release it. And she didn't say anything, but I noticed, man, the language is bad. And then she comments. So that's when I knew. Catching up on pretty much everything that has been show-worthy since I took a hiatus 5 years ago, a pretty tall order, even for me. But there are some things I really do want to discuss. And today I wanted to talk about a very good movie about what it's like to be a chef and how evil food critics can be. I've never been a fan of food critics because for some, and not all, but for some, it's about sitting behind a computer, sometimes anonymously, which is chicken shit, and tearing apart careers. Chefing is hard. Being creative, coming up with fresh ideas, then executing them in the kitchen with a team is hard. You're putting it all out there to appease some assholes who wouldn't know a saute pan from their man boobs. And it makes me irate when they're unfair to hardworking professionals. Art critics, music critics, movie critics, same thing. Okay, you studied film in college, but how were you as a filmmaker, a storyteller? Not that great, or you'd be making movies instead of writing articles about them and giving them two thumbs up your ass. Chef is the movie we're discussing today. The film is directed by Jon Favreau, who also plays the lead character, Carl Casper. And at the risk of completely ruining it, maybe even getting myself in trouble here, I'm basically going to give the plot of this movie away, unfortunately. So if you haven't seen it, and it's 3 years old now, so I'm hoping at least some of you have caught it, you can either skip ahead in the show and listen to it later, or listen to it anyway. Believe me, I can talk all day about this movie, but I can't do justice to the food porn in this film, or the acting, storytelling, and basically the inspiration that it gives to people who want to either work in a kitchen or just get better at being a home cook. I mean, the film is full of technique, the right way to make a grilled cheese sandwich, how to properly prepare pasta, how important sauces are, how elements are added to a dish, all of the little things that add up to making a great plate of food. Carl Casper is the head chef of a restaurant in LA, loved by his kitchen staff as well as the hostess, played by Scarlett Johansson, who, by the way, he's banging on the side. The owner of the restaurant wants Carl to stick to classics rather than innovate dishes, which he, like any chef worth his salt, is prone to do. And who wouldn't? Look, you're the head chef of a restaurant. Why wouldn't you want to spread your creative wings? He has a son who he has partial custody of with his ex-wife, played by Sofia Vergara. And his relationship with his son is weak. All right, he spends time with him, but it's never quality time because his mind is always on his work. It's painful to watch because you can tell that his son wants a better relationship with his father and can't understand why he and his mom can't just patch things up so they can be a happy family again. When Carl has a chance to prove his creative talents to a famous food critic and blogger who they know is coming to the restaurant to eat, the restaurant owner demands that he stick with old favorites at the very last minute, which Carl does, and the critic rips him a new brand new asshole for it. I mean, it's bad. And this is where most chefs I know would tell the restaurant owner to go fuck themselves, all right? But this is Hollywood, and you have to tell a good story, no matter how unbelievable it might be. Here's the critic's review.
Dalwaz, Eager to Please. Woo! 10 years ago, I had the good fortune to dine at Chef Casper's revelatory Miami Bistro,
Marrow. Miami in the house!
Marrow, baby!
The house!
The sheer audacity of this fresh, brave voice of the culinary scene reminded me why I write about food as a vocation. That's a lot of pressure. It is nearly impossible to separate my glowing regard for Chef Casper and how much he inspired me from my expectations as I sat down to dine at the recently remodeled Brentwood Gallic staple, Galois.
Yeah, this is good.
Look how times have changed. Over the last decade, Carl Casper has somehow managed to transform himself from the edgiest chef in Miami to the needy aunt that gives you $5 every time you see her in hopes that you will like her, but instead causes you to shrink from her cloying embrace, which threatens to smother you in her saggy, moist cleavage. The signature app intended to impress the country club brunch crowd is the caviar egg. A shirred egg topped with a dollop of caviar is an excuse for the chef to overcharge us for his insecurity and lack of imagination. Carl Casper can best be summed up by the first bite of his needy and yet, by some miracle, also irrelevant chocolate lava cake. Casper didn't even have the courage to undercook the cake, thus curiously lacking its signature molten center. This sad dessert is emblematic of Carl Casper's disappointing new chapter. His dramatic weight gain can only be explained by the fact that he must be eating all the food sent back to the kitchen. 2 stars.
That night, his son teaches him how to use Twitter, helps him set up an account, and while his son is sleeping, Carl insults the critic for the bad review, tells him that he wouldn't know a good meal if it sat on his face. Now, he thinks he's sending a private message, but he doesn't realize that his reply is public. He wakes up the next morning to a huge Twitter following and a flame war. Sometimes I wonder if Trump does this. I mean, sounds kind of familiar, right? Like drunk tweeting. Well, Carl then comes up with an inspirational new menu that his staff falls in love with, and he invites the critic to come and try again. But this time, he gets in a fight with the owner of the restaurant. The owner wants him again to cook the same old bullshit. But Carl walks out this time and quits, finally. That night, he goes home, prepares the menu that he wanted to serve the critic, and it's phenomenal. In the meantime, Carl's assistant becomes the interim chef, and they totally shit the bed. I mean, even the regular classic dishes that they normally serve become just a total disaster. The critic tweets even more negative stuff about Carl, which then provokes Carl to drive to the restaurant, where he gets super pissed and berates the guy in front of the entire restaurant full of people. Listen to this meltdown.
I've been waiting to talk to this prick for a long time.
Okay.
I am not cloying. I am not needy. I don't care what you think. You're not getting to me. I'm not needy. Chocolate lava cake is not just undercooked chocolate cake. That's not what makes the center molten. You take a frozen cylinder of ganache and you set it in the ramekin so that as the outside cooks fully, the inside becomes molten.
Okay.
It's fucking molten, see? It's fucking molten, you asshole. And you don't do anything. What do? You sit and you eat and you vomit those words back to make people laugh. You know how hard I work for this shit? Do you know how my whole staff works? What sacrifices I make to make you happy, and then you just smugly just fucking shit on my shit? It hurts!
Yes.
It fucking hurts when you write that shit. It hurt you!
It does. It does.
He thought you were gonna close his fucking restaurant down. You asshole. And what do? You just write shit to make... You just make shit up! My shit was molten! It's fucking molten! Asshole!
Now, just imagine that in French, and that's Ludo. Behind closed doors, of course. I mean, I don't know any chef who would actually do this to a critic in front of his customers. It's suicide. Well, videos of Carl's meltdown go viral. They're everywhere. And he loses all of his credibility. I mean, he's ruined. The hostess and his ex-wife encourage him to open a food truck, which to me always kind of sounds like a risky idea, but in this case, it makes sense. He accepts his ex-wife's invitation to Miami, where he spends some quality time with his son, and rediscovers his love for Cuban cuisine. As it turns out, he's from Miami, so he's right at home with this food and Miami, so... It works out for him. His ex-wife's first husband, Marvin, who is played by Robert Downey Jr., offers him a food truck, which, to call this thing a piece of shit, would be a compliment. And Carl says, yes, I'll take the truck. I mean, this thing's horrible. The engine smokes. The inside of it looks like a jail cell after a race riot. There's year-old food stuck to the pans. It's disgusting. And to rub even more salt in his wounds. He finds out that his wife, his ex-wife, and her first husband, Marvin, spent some time together after their divorce, which pisses him off to no end. He and his son fight and bond while they're restoring the truck. They go buy food and supplies, and in a really cool moment that I want to share here, Carl takes his son to a restaurant supply house to buy new equipment for the truck and buys his son a chef's knife. So awesome.
You know what this is?
French fries?
That's right, a fryer. This is what we need right here. Come on, let's go. Double convection oven underneath. It's a real workhorse, 60 inches. I think we could fit that on a truck. What do you think?
Let's get it.
Let's get this one. Good, done. This is the, here's what we need. This is the thing I was looking for right there.
A George Foreman grill?
It's not a George Foreman grill. It's called a plancho. You make Cuban sandwiches on that. That's the key to our entire livelihood. We need two of these.
Okay.
Looks good. You know what? Let's also get the 6-inch chef's knife with the plastic handle.
And then you need also the holder, right?
Yeah, I think that cover as well. Okay, see this, Percy? That's a chef's knife, a real chef's knife. It's not a toy. You understand? This thing's sharp. It could send you to the hospital if you're not careful. I'm going to teach you how to use this thing. But a chef's knife, it belongs to the chef, not to the kitchen. So it's your responsibility to keep it sharp, clean, not to lose it. Could you handle that?
Yes.
This is a good knife. It'll last you a long time if you take care of it. Don't lose it.
I won't. Thank you.
You earned it.
His assistant from the restaurant gets promoted to sous chef, but turns the promotion down and decides to go work with Carl, who now feels like he's really found his stride as a chef again. So Carl, his son, and his friend from the restaurant drive the food truck across the country back to Los Angeles, and they specialize in authentic Cuban sandwiches. His son, who's adept at Twitter and all the social media that we have, finds ways to promote the food truck on social media, just as Chrissy did for Ludo, which, if you don't know already, was one of the key reasons why Ludo Bites was such a success. Anyway, the truck becomes successful in New Orleans and Texas, where they're serving daily specials in those regions to include items that are made with local ingredients. They make po' boys and barbecue brisket, all kinds of different sandwiches, but very regional. In this clip, they visit this local barbecue joint to pick up 4 huge briskets that these guys have been smoking overnight. It's like a big drug deal that's about to go down, except it's beef instead of crack.
What's up, Carl?
How you doing?
How you doing?
Driving all night. Doing good. You still got the stuff?
Let's do it.
All right, he's got the stuff.
What is this place?
This is Texas OG barbecue. These guys got to stay up all night and stoke those fires low and slow.
Oh, man, that's gorgeous. So how many can I get?
I guess 4.
I'll take it.
All right.
Woo!
Nice.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, there we go. Oh,
man. Mm. We should get some sliders.
Told we should do sliders, man. We get some King's Hawaiian bread, pickle, barbecue sauce.
Maybe what if we swap this out for the pork in the medianoche? What do you think about that?
Swap this for the pork sauce?
Uh-huh.
Make like Austin Midnight.
That's I like that. Hot, baby.
Let me get one more of these.
All of my side.
Oh. Just let me cut right there.
Save it, dog.
I know, we're going to save
it. Use it all up,
okay,
man.
You get half. I'll give you half.
Look how much more
you know you can't eat your own supply?
This
come on,
good.
Man.
Put it away after this.
Okay, I was going to play more, but I think I've given enough of the movie away, and I don't want to really kind of spoil the rest of it for you, but you get the idea. For the rest, in a very nicely wrapped up ending, you're just going to have to watch the movie for yourself and see it. But I guarantee you, it's a very good payoff. Available on Blu-ray, iTunes Digital, Vudu, or you can watch it on Netflix right now, I think. Either that or is it Amazon Prime? I saw it on one of the two. You can check. If not, you know, buy it. Shit, it's 3 years old now. You can probably buy the damn thing for $10 on Blu-ray. Wait a minute here. Hold on. Yeah, look, I nailed it. $10. Best Buy, Walmart, Target. $10. Hey, speaking of which, doesn't that kind of piss you off? I mean, I don't buy movies right away anymore. I used to fall in love with certain movies that I'd see, and then I'd put the release dates on my calendar. And that Tuesday, when they came out, was like Christmas to me. You know, I'd buy the movie, I'd get it home, I'd watch the special features, I'd listen to the director's commentary. And I was a real loser, but I loved to do that. And now, you know, who has the time? You know, I'll rent them or stream them on iTunes. And only in rare cases, I mean, if I really know I'm going to watch the movie more than four or five times, I'll buy it. Well, I bought Chef straight out. I buy very few movies anymore, but I bought that one. I bought City of Gold, the documentary on Jonathan Gold, too. And I'll talk about that one sometime. But if you can wait for like a year or two, Blu-rays go from $22 to $10 in the bargain bin. And it's getting so cheap to buy them digitally now that I have to really wonder how long Blu-ray's even going to be around. Hey, football's back, which is great for me. I love watching football, college and pro. And usually, you'll start seeing these articles that come out whenever a new pro season starts. Most commonly happens with baseball. And they always go around the league and compare concession prices and availability. And I'll tell you something. It's impressive just how much more is available at stadiums now compared to, say, even a decade ago. I mean, back in the day, I'm way back in the day, you went to a ball game, you got maybe a beer or two, hot dog, maybe some nachos, and that was it. Now they have pretty much everything. And some stadiums have actual restaurants inside of them at special, these executive sections. I mean, it gets really high end. Why I bring this up is because whenever they do these special exposés on stadiums and all the food offerings that they provide, people generally complain about the prices. And I'll agree, it's gotten ridiculous. Now, I don't want to age myself here, but when I was in my 20s, you could get a beer for about $4 or $5 at a ballpark. Now I think it's something like 15 or 20 bucks. I don't know because I stopped that shit, but I remember the last time I had a beer at a ball game, it was the price of a six-pack. But did I complain about it? No. I paid for it, alarmingly, you know, drank my beer, and I shut the F up about it. But people constantly complain about how expensive it is to enjoy a ball game now. And I think it's a bad argument. It's not expensive to enjoy a ball game. Baseball? Still relatively inexpensive to go to a baseball game. Hockey and basketball? Maybe a little higher. Football's higher still. Only when you throw in the price of food and drinks does it become an expensive night out. My question is, why do you have to drink and eat at a ball game? You're there for 3 hours. If you're hungry, or you know you're going to be hungry, eat before the game, even if it's drive-through fast food. Eat something to tide you over, enjoy the game, then go have dinner afterward. And if you have to drink, drink water. Or pay whatever ridiculous price they're asking for that beer and go on with it. I know, it's more enjoyable to watch a game while you're eating and drinking. Does it ever bother you to watch these games on television? Basketball is a perfect example of this. These guys on the court are in amazing shape. Muscular, ripped abs, fast as hell, 5% body fat, ridiculously athletic. Then they cut to some fat shit sitting in the stands with a LeBron James jersey, you know, stuffing his face with a triple cheeseburger. The dichotomy of that scenario gets me every time. And you see these guys walking around everywhere. 150 pounds or more, overweight, not an athletic bone in his body, a couple tacos away from cardiac arrest, and he's wearing a jersey with an athlete's name on it. Like we're supposed to be mistaking this guy for Aaron Rodgers or something. I'm not saying don't eat or drink at ball games. I'm just saying shut up about the prices. To this day, I still can't stand going to the theater to watch a movie because inevitably there's going to be some butthole behind me crushing a 5-gallon paint can-sized bucket of popcorn who acts like he hasn't eaten in weeks. I go there to watch a movie, not listen to people endlessly chew crunchy shit with their mouths open. Sporting events are a lot different, though. There's so much noise. You can hardly hear each other talk, let alone people around you eating. I'll never forget the time I went to see Castaway, the Tom Hanks movie. Maybe one of the quietest movies this side of the silent film era. I think there was like 45 minutes with zero dialogue at one point in that film. And all I heard was eating and talking. Bugged the shit out of me. Then, to up the ante, I ended up seated next to this kid with Tourette syndrome. Just kept yelling shit out. Miserable. Made me wish that it was me stuck in the deserted island.
Do you guys shop at Whole Foods, anybody? Shop at, okay. Rich white people in here, I see. I'm on HBO. I still can't afford chicken at Whole Foods. That's messed up. Chicken's $8 a pound at Whole Foods. $8, because all they got is the fancy organic free-range chicken, okay? Chicken should not be more than a federal minimum wage. You shouldn't, like, be frying an hour worth of nuggets at McDonald's and only afford half a chicken thigh at Whole Foods. That's messed up. And don't get me wrong. I'm all about, like, animal rights. I'm all about, like, free-range animal. But I still live in a one-bedroom apartment with two roommates. I'm not even a free-range human being, okay? I don't need to eat a chicken to live better than I did. The chicken's on 20 acres in Napa. I'm in 200 square foot in Pacoima. It's messed up. Bullshit. Because this is how they try to sell you on the chicken, like Foster Farms, this corporate company. They're like, the happier the chicken, the better it tastes, right? It's bullshit. Don't listen to that. I want to eat the most miserable chicken possible. So I don't feel bad killing a happy chicken. I want to eat the chicken that's borderline suicidal, you know? Just lost his custody battle, getting divorced and shit. It's gonna kill itself anyways, I'm just doing it a favor. Like the Dr. Kevorkian of chickens.
Hey, this was a bit of shocking news last week. L'Al, the restaurant where Anthony Bourdain got his start, officially closed after a bankruptcy court ordered that the owner give up his lease. The owner, Philippe Lejarnier, how do you pronounce his name, Lejarnier, filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy in May. That would have allowed him to keep the company alive and keep the lease on the space as part of the process. Any of you who watched early episodes of A Cook's Tour would know who Philippe is. He joined Tony, he traveled on the Mekong River in Vietnam, I think. He was in that episode. If I'm not mistaken, he joined him in his first episode of Parts Unknown on CNN, Myanmar. I believe that was him there too. By the end of July, court had decided that Philippe and L'Al needed to give up the lease. On August 8th, the judge also decided to reject Philippe's bankruptcy case and is asking him now to prove why he shouldn't just fold the restaurant's company altogether instead of Chapter 7 bankruptcy. There's going to be another hearing on August 29th. Apparently, they've been in some financial trouble for a very long time. He had a couple locations. The first one closed last year, and he blamed that on a massive rent hike, but he was way behind on his rent there. But this guy has major money problems. According to this report on Eater, at least two vendors have sued the restaurant for unpaid bills in the last 2 years. Last May, L'Al and Philippe settled a case with a produce vendor over unpaid bills and paid more than $26,000. In October of last year, this is worse, this restaurant rewards program company sued him for $665,000 in damages for breach of contract. And it doesn't stop there. Even his lawyers are suing him. They had withdrawn from a class action labor lawsuit that was against him, saying that he owed them more than $100,000 in legal fees and hadn't paid those either. That judge ended up ruling in favor of the employees because Philippe had not been following the rules of the lawsuit in the first place. Former employees also accused him of closing the first location without any warning. Before he shuttered it, a group of servers had walked out during a Friday night service because their paychecks had bounced. Hey man, when I told you that the restaurant business was hard, I was not joking. If a place like that, with such a long history in New York, cannot keep its doors open, there's a problem. But who knows? You know, Philippe could have been spending more money than he could actually afford to spend. He looked like a man who did not cut corners in his personal life. So it's possible maybe he was just living outside of his means for a while.
And just to rob you further, right? Just to rob you further, these grocery stores, they're forcing you to donate money. You know what I'm talking about? It's a public shaming is what it is. As you're checking out your groceries, the cashier lady, she's like, sir, today would you purchase this? Do you like to also donate a dollar to the Save the Children Foundation? I'm like, look, bitch, all I got is four packs of ramen noodles, man. What the fuck do you want from me? Somebody should give me a dollar, okay? I just use coupons and my EBT card. It's messed up. Somebody behind me in line was like, oh my God, that Asian chick is really mad. Wow. Better be careful.
Hey, not sure if any of you had a chance to see my latest video, but I featured the 2x spicy chicken ramen challenge. I had not heard about this, but Michelle said that it was everywhere on the internet, and we were at our local Asian market, and she wanted to look at ramen, which I found kind of odd, because she never requests ramen. It's not that she doesn't like it. It's something she'll have if I'm making it, but it's not something she requests. So she shows me a picture of the package, and she goes, you have to try this. Now, luckily, we were at the one Asian market that I know has pretty much every known brand of ramen. If you're looking for it, they'll usually have it. And they did have it, so I bought a 5-pack, and I brought it home to try it. If you've seen the video, you already know my thoughts. But if you haven't, my thoughts were very positive. It was not only just as spicy as you would think it would be, but it was actually very good. It was delicious. Now, whenever you see something that says extra spicy, and you're a true chili head, sometimes you're kind of setting yourself up for a huge letdown. In most cases, they'll try to overdo it with the chili, and you end up with something that's certainly spicy but tastes like dog shit baked in mustard gas. You know, really bad. That wasn't the case with this package of noodles. If you go looking for it, it's really easy to spot. Take a look at the video that I posted on mylifeasafoodie.com if you need a reference. It's made by Samyang Foods in Korea. 2X spicy hot chicken flavor ramen. The noodles are fat. Prep is very easy, of course. You know, it's ramen. And it, like pretty much every single thing from Korea, it's delicious. It really is good. They even have a heat rating scale on the package. And this taught me something. You know about the Scoville scale, right? Well, SHU stands for Scoville Heat Units. So it's the same thing, but it's just a different way of saying it. And this package of ramen is rated at nearly 9,000 SHUs, which is right around that of a jalapeno pepper. So if you can tolerate eating a jalapeno pepper, you can tolerate this bowl of noodles. But what people were doing with this was more of a challenge. Two people sat down to a bowl of these noodles, and they would see who could finish the bowl first or who would just tap out. I don't do this stuff anymore, the challenges. I just like to see how much heat I can handle on my own, as I do enjoy it. And my tolerance is high, very high actually. So the only thing I've ever really tapped out on was a particularly brutal red Sorvina habanero. I mean, I handle the regular habanero okay, but you know, that's not easy for me to do, but I ate it. But the red Sorvina, at least this one, was way too hot for me to finish. I grew, and I'm still growing, the boot jalokia, or ghost pepper. Now, I've eaten about a third of one of those before, and it was no mas. I tapped out. You do remember the dynamite challenge at Jitlada that I did with Joe. That was food that was cooked with the ghost pepper. And I can assure you that if the food was not so goddamn delicious, there's no way I would have tolerated the heat that food had. I don't get macho about this stuff. I love the sensation hot peppers bring to my mouth and the endorphin rush that comes along with it, but I'm not into challenging people like it's a test of manhood or anything. It's juvenile. Now, I did that shit when I was in my 20s. A boss of mine, when I still worked in the photo business, he had a mouth that I swear had to be lined with Teflon. He'd eat anything, the crotch out of a dead horse. He comes to my darkroom one day with 2 fresh habaneros, hands me one, doesn't say a word, just looks at me, then bites into this thing right down to the stem, starts chewing. So being the young, dumb, full of you-know-what dipshit that I was back then, I did the same. About 3 chews in, I felt like someone had hooked an industrial-sized wet vac to my asshole and cranked it full blast. It was the most vicious thing I'd ever experienced in my life. He's already done. Swallows it, shows me his tongue. And now, you know, Mr. Dipshit, young 20-year-old, pressure's on for me to finish this thing, so I chewed in pain as quickly as I could, gulped it down. I had tears rolling down my face. This guy's laughing his ass off. I hated that prick. Wanted to kill him, but I needed the money. About 10 minutes later, I'm doubled over in pain. I can't even reach the equipment that I need to use to finish the job I was working on. And little did I know, I was suffering from a bilateral hernia at the time. So anything spicy that I ate irritated my intestines and went into my balls. It was horrible. That was TMI. Anyway, that was the last time I accepted any challenge of manhood. Anyway, check out the video. Check out the ramen. It's really good. It's delicious. All right, guys, I'm going to wrap it up. Thanks for joining me today. Check out the movie Chef by Jon Favreau. Buy it on Blu-ray. $10. Not bad. Audio courtesy of Open Road Films and The Laugh Factory. Music in this episode from Logum and Dreezy. If you like the music, buy the songs, support the artists. MyLifeAsAFoodie.com. Until next time, my name is Phil, and this has been My Life as a Foodie. Salute. I just wanna take away the pressure. I knew you were special when I met you. Hate the way you battle your confessions. I wait for you, I gotta know, I gotta know. With your mental because you get me. And whenever you want me, you can hit me. I'll be there in a minute, boy. I'm trying to get close to you. To you. Oh, oh. Anything you want, I got it. And my feelings, boy, I'm so about you. Just wanna get to know your body. Baby, anything goes when I'm trying to get close to you. To you. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, na, na, na. Oh, na, na. Oh, na, na, na. Nah, I just wanna make this a win-win, baby. So tell me, is your heart or is your end, baby? I just end up sharing skin, babies. I am his twins, babe. I wanna get close to you. Swagger got me falling like a leaf in autumn. And I don't give a damn about his baby mama. He always on my mind, I think I'm about to call him. It might not last forever, but it's speed to healing. This ain't the same with him, I get a better feeling. Don't care about what they say, it ain't nobody business. I said I wouldn't fall, I guess you got me slipping. Trying to get close to you. Yeah. I'm trying to get close to you. Baby, anything goes when I'm